Walt Disney once said that for every laugh, there should be a tear, which is why I think, anyway, he would have loved Drawn to Life, that hugely entertaining, surprising, and emotional spectacle, which is now being presented live on stage at Disney Springs in Lake Buena Vista, Florida. Presented by Cirque du Soleil and Disney, this is a show that I can guarantee you will captivate audiences of all ages. Drawn to Life is a must-see, family-friendly spectacle that will leave you, well, in awe. So don't miss out on your chance to be part of the magic. Plan your visit to Disney Springs today and reserve your seats for Drawn to Life by Cirque du Soleil and Disney live on stage. Set your imagination in motion.
Welcome back to another edition of the Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It's me, Len Testa, and this is our show for the week of Schmursday, April 22nd, 2024. Happy birthday, Disney's Animal Kingdom. Mm-hmm. On the show today, news, our first surveys about Universal's upcoming kids park. Plus, I go horseback riding at Fort Wilderness and live to tell the tale. Then listener questions, and in our main segment, Jim gives us part three of the story of how Disney World's Tomorrowland came to be. Let's get started by bringing in the man who has just learned from human resources that when your coworker says, "Can I ask a dumb question?" your response should not be, "More than anyone I know, I swear to God." It's Mr. Jim Hill. Jim, how's it going?
It's going well, Len. And like those years you spent at American Express, I did my time in a really for real office environment back in the early 1980s. I worked at the Rob Report. Do you know this magazine?
Yes. The fancy schmancy Rob Report. Yeah.
There we go. For super rich people. I mean, for me, it was kind of ironic. So I drive into work in my hand-me-down Pinto. This was the one that would explode if you hit it from behind. All right. And then, you know, I'd have to go in and proofread articles about, you know, the very best places to take your yacht if it needed to be refurbished.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, a relative comparison of the salinity of different oceans for your yacht. Yes,
no, that's exactly. But what I remember vividly about this work experience is the break room at the Sam Phillips building. This was where the Rob Report at that time was published in Acton, Massachusetts. And all of these high-end companies would send product samples to the Rob Report, hoping to get included in the next issue. And so you know how you go into your break room and, you know, typical break room, and there's that collection, weird collection of mugs, you know, that's half clean, none of them match, all right? At the Rob Report.
Yeah.
The exact same thing.
A mink stole.
No, it was all bone china. Again, it was like all of these little teeny tiny teacups that somebody had like, put it in the break room. And so, and the thing is, people would make the mistake of, well, I'm going to heat up my cup of coffee. I take this demi-tasse cup, put it in the microwave, and it would explode into shards. You know?
Yeah, because it's, number one, you can't do that because it's porous, right? It's got little air holes in it.
That's it, exactly. But it was, again, I didn't last long there, but I, again, remember it vividly, you know?
That's a fantastic story. Are they still published in Florida?
I want to say they actually moved to Florida. What was interesting is Acton, Massachusetts, Concord, Lexington, that was old money. And, okay. You know, eventually they moved to Florida because that's where the new money was. Yeah. And more to the point, these are the people who were kind of obsessed with, well, if I've got money, how do I look like I have money? And it's like, right. Well, the Rob Report will tell you how.
That is a fascinating. I didn't know that. I didn't know you worked there. That's a fascinating story.
Yeah, well, they don't speak proudly of my tenure, Len. You know?
I'll swing by and see if there's still a don't let this person in.
There we go. There we go. Right in the lobby. All right.
You know, right in the lobby.
It's exactly. A lovely frame, I might add. But you know, just
you know. A little spotlight over it, so everyone knows.
There we exactly. Go. There we go.
All right, Jim. Let's do a quick shout out to our subscribers. Thanks to everyone who subscribes to the show over at patreon.com/JimHillMedia, including Matt Stout, Michael Lee, Jonathan Wyman, Jake Pearson, David Maruka, and Jennifer Stewart. Jim, this is the Disney culinary team on the new frontier of Disney theme park food, outbound marketing. So one day soon, we could get personalized messages in my Disney experience like, "Hey, it's Jennifer. We just made Tonga toast. I can swing by in 10 minutes with some coffee. You interested?" Hmm. True story. Oh. I know. Why is this not a real thing, Jim?
Yeah. Ooh, okay.
I mean, you think Uber Eats is something? Tonga toast on delivery when you didn't know you wanted it.
I would meet that car at the end of the driveway. Exactly. I mean, they wouldn't even have to come up. You know, it's just like, wow.
I think I would challenge the world record for reading off my credit card number.
There you go. There we go.
I don't know how long it is, but I can do it pretty quick. Anyway. All right. On to the news. Folks, the news is sponsored by touringplans.com. Touring Plans helps you save time and money at theme parks like Walt Disney World. Check us out at touringplans.com. All right, Jim, every show should begin with a round of self-congratulations. We said on the April 1st show that we thought Tiana's would open in the first half of June. Last week, Disney sent out invitations to the Tiana opening media event, which is June 9th to the 11th. So as a reminder, cast members are currently blocked out of the Magic Kingdom June 3rd to the 14th. So cast member previews are likely before June 3rd, because otherwise the cast members who would preview it would be blocked out of the park. Am I getting that right, Jim?
That makes sense to me. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That would also open the possibility of some guest previews the first week of June, starting with Golden Oak residents and eventually, you know, DVC and AP. Have you started to hear feedback from anyone who's actually been on the ride?
It's the, you can't talk about this, but I need to tell you about this, you know. So it's an interesting conversation, but yeah, they seem very enthusiastic.
Yeah, the stuff I've heard about it is very encouraging. Mm-hmm, so that's good.
Yep.
All right, good. So we'll see. Mm-hmm. All right. Also, Jim, last week, Universal Orlando announced dates for Halloween Horror Nights. Mm-hmm. It starts Friday, August 30th and goes through Sunday, November 3rd. It's mostly Wednesdays through Sundays. Single night tickets start at around $88. VIP tours and express passes are available. I highly recommend both of those things. Also, I'm going, Jim, I don't know if you want to do it, the week of September 20th, the weekend.
Let me look into that.
If you're there, yeah, let me know.
Okay. Just a couple of quick notes before we move on here. Earliest this has ever started, in fact, the very first time.
August 30th is, yeah.
You know, and also runs, again, you know, a couple of days into November. This is the first year they've done 44 dates.
Yeah. I mean, that tells you how popular it is, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
So I'm excited to see what the house themes are this year. But again, if you're going, definitely get the Express Pass. Saves tons of time in line. And also, if you're going to do a VIP tour, which, Jim, for these events, they're called the RIP tours.
Right? There we go. Yeah.
Love it. Yep. Love it. Yep. Ask for Logan S. As your tour guide. All right. Okay. Also, Jim, Universal has announced the names and opening dates of its moderate resorts for Epic Universe. So Universal's Stella Nova Resort opens January 21st, 2025, and Universal's Terra Luna Resort opens February 25th, 2025. I believe, Jim, mm-hmm. both of these are at the south end of the park, close to the convention center. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Very deliberate design. Because, you know, long term, you know, the convention center is a key component of the, you know, the overall success of this park.
Right. Makes sense. Yeah, it's literally around the back of mm-hmm. the convention center. So combine these two resorts, will have 1,500 rooms, so roughly 750 each. Mm-hmm. The first one, Stella Nova, when it opens, I believe it's opening on a weekend. Mm-hmm. So I paid $230 a night with tax for an upgraded pool view for that opening night. And then I paid $201 a night with tax for the same upgraded pool view room at Terra Luna. So you can make reservations now. Weeknight rates start at $160. Weeknight rates at $240, that's with tax. Universal advertises these as moderates. That is definitely significantly less than what Disney charges for a moderate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But you know, again, this is part of the overall Universal game plan. We've talked previously about Endless Summer, you know, the dockside, surfside down on International. And you know, I think you and I have both heard from the same people at Universal who talked about how, you know, Comcast decided to operate those hotels at a loss for 7 years, just yeah. with the notion of getting people used to, you know, coming to Universal properties, seeing how nice they are. So with the notion of, you know, they'll have a great family experience on their vacation and will come back there the next time they come to Orlando. So, you know, same Absolutely. Thing here with Stella Nova and Terra Luna.
I mean, besides the price point, the thing that I'm super impressed with the Surfside and Dockside hotels is the soundproofing. Like when you and I stayed there, I think I told this story, but this, you know, we got there opening day, and literally the hallway carpets were still wet from being steam cleaned the night before official opening. And there was an air blower directly outside of my room, one of those industrial ones that you put down on the floor, and it basically, you know, puts hurricane strength winds, you know, all down the hallway. I closed my door of my room and I could not hear that fan going. That tells you how good the soundproofing is at that hotel. And so for these moderatory, we've got quick service restaurants. So the Cosmos Cafe and Market at Stella Nova and Omega Cafe and Market at Terra Luna. So basic American food there for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then grab and go items. They've also got bars, the Galaxy Bar and Galaxy Grill, and the Moonrise Bar and Moonrise Grill at Terra Luna. So again, burgers, quesadillas, bar food, stuff like that. Also lobby bars, which I think Universal does a really good lobby bar. The one at Cabana Bay to me is a particular favorite.
Yeah, great fun.
They've each got 10,000 square foot pools. They've got fitness centers. They've got game rooms. So everything you'd expect in a moderate resort. I'm super excited to be there on opening day. So Jim, does this the fact that these things are opening in January and February, does this point to an earlier opening for Epic Universe?
For me, what's always interesting about reporting on the Universal parks is they don't have the giant team that Imagineering has.
No, they don't. Yeah, no. I have a funny story to tell you about this when we're off air.
Okay, so a teeny tiny team. So it means that secrets do genuinely get kept at Universal, and so you know every time I have walked around the edges of this question, I have asked it in as many different ways as I can, and you know, and everyone I talk with looks at me basically with the look of penalty of death. I can't tell you
because it's such a small team. We end up with the rubber hose effect, right?
Yeah.
So few people know the actual date.
Yeah,
that Universal, if it really got out, Universal would just put everyone in a room, beat them over the knees with rubber hoses until someone talked.
But at the same time, thanks to BioReconstruct, we have a very good handle on where the project is, the park anyway, in its construction phase. Likewise, I don't know if you saw the stuff that Alicia Stella posted just earlier this week, where the ride vehicle for the Harry Potter attraction was literally rolling down I-4, the giant multi-dimensional elevator car, and just sort of like, so yeah, things are happening. Everything points to a first half of 2025 opening, but ever since we had a pandemic, Len, and the world shut down, I'm a little reluctant to go on the record about that.
About future dates. Yeah, the stuff I love about the coverage that Alicia is doing and that BioReconstruct is doing is we're getting so many updates, and it's so frequent now. Like, I swear to God, there are some photos from Bio where I just want to call someone at Universal and say, there's a guy working at Epic Universe, and he's using a metric wrench. And it should be Imperial. And they look, can you tell him that now?
Can you tell Bob that his pants don't match the shirt? All right,
Exactly. Safety vest required. All right, anyway. And speaking of park building, Disney announced a major expansion and name change for its second park in France, currently known as Walt Disney Studios Park. Now it's a name change to, Jim, Disney Adventure World?
Mm-hmm.
And the expansion will nearly double the size of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they say one of the things coming is an immersive experience, such as World of Frozen, to go along with Avengers Campus and Worlds of Pixar. Jim, that means we'll have a dedicated Frozen Lands in France, Tokyo, and Shanghai, but not, I note, in the United States. I mean, coincidentally, we are at the very beginning of a 10-year expansion cycle here in the United States. I'm just going to leave it at that. Here,
okay,
Jim, let me put this at your feet.
There we go. There's another story there. I can't tell.
Okay, fair. Anyway, Disney says more than 90% of the park will be redone, which is an astounding amount. How much of DCA was redone when it became DCA 2 Electric Boogaloo? Like, what was the...
Well, again,
it wasn't 90%. I
mean, where it gets interesting, remember, we at this point have had DCA 2.0 and 3.0. Because remember, we had the Pixar Pier transformation and the Avengers Campus. It's at this point, I would say a full 75%. Of that park has been reimagined. And if, the word coming out of Anaheim, which I know we'll be talking about later in the show, is any indication, that other 25% of the park should be getting nervous right about now.
Your time is coming. Yeah, okay. All right, so for France, for the Frozen Land, they're adding a Bay of Water, including a Frozen Ever After ride and an Anna and Elsa meet and greet, which we have in Epcot. Jim, Disney didn't say it, but I'm guessing that body of water would make sense as a venue for a nighttime show.
Oh, yes, yes. And in fact, if you look at the construction photos just now that are coming out of France, what's fascinating is in the middle of the bay, there appears to be a platform that they're building that will raise and lower. So when it comes time for the nighttime extravaganza, we may have a situation where an island rises up out of the water and, you know, we get our performance venue then.
Oh, that would be spectacular.
That way. Very true. Very true.
All right. Disney also announced a Tangled themed update to the teacups called Rapunzel Tangled Spin. Jim, you and I saw this ride vehicle at Imagineering last year, and we were sworn to secrecy about
it. We were. You know, in fact, what made me kind of crazy is what? To the left was the Tangled ride vehicle, and to the right was the model for an early version of Frozen Land. I want to say
There's a lot. Yeah, no photos. We couldn't talk about it. We actually signed NDAs for this one, so couldn't talk about it. But yeah, and didn't our friend Jim Scholl work on the ride vehicle?
I want to say yes, but what's interesting is you work on something that falls off the table. I mean, in fact, Mr. Scholl, when I asked him earlier this week about the name change, and he was like, well, look, to be honest, you know, they have been talking about changing the name of Walt Disney Studios Park in Paris as far back as 2019. I mean, 5 years ago, you know, this idea was put forward about the rebranding. And I know a lot of people, when they heard the Disney Adventure World name, is like, okay, you know, you always joke about, you know, the room, you know, on Disney property with the word wheel, the five names they use over
the five and names. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, they don't do this casually. I mean, you know, just the costs involved when you decide to rename a park, when you go from, say, a Disney MGM to Disney's Hollywood Studios, when you think about, you have to go all the way from business cards out to highway signs. This is hugely expensive, Len.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. I cannot wait for the old Walt Disney Studio Park Paris letterhead to come online at Cast Connection, because we can pick that up for cheap.
There we go.
Last couple of bits on this. There's supposed to be a princess character meet and greet at the Regal View Restaurant and Lounge, which is a table service restaurant that will have views of that Bay of Water, Adventure Bay, along with princess greetings, and then updates to the hotels and to the Disney Village as well. So this is a fairly large project. Yeah, looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. Before we go, one quick thing. Jim, I rode horses at Fort Wilderness over the weekend.
What brought that on?
I think Chrissy thought it would be fun for social media to see me falling off a horse, honest to God.
Okay.
And I didn't. So and also Chrissy told me to be there at 7:30. It starts at 8. So the earliest appointment is 8. Because it's 7:30 and I thought you had to go all the way to the back of the resort, I was up at 5:30 and I was there at 7. But it turns out the horseback riding is actually right at the check-in at the front. So you walk over, they put you on a quick scale to make sure you're not too heavy for the horse. And then at 8 o'clock, they give you instructions and saddle you up. So my horse was Arrow, the goodest good boy that ever was. So there were 12 of us, you know, you get the safety, speech. They tell you how to steer the horse, which is basically, they don't come out and tell you this, but it's like, this is the closest thing to an Omnimover attraction that you could have with real horses, because those horses knew that route better than any of us could have done it. The horses basically looked back at me and said, just don't do anything dumb, and we're all going to be fine here. So we go all throughout Fort Wilderness. It's actually kind of nice. They didn't take us back to where the new cabins were because construction was going on and they said it might spook the horses, but they have dedicated nature trails that they go through. So we saw deer. Many deer along the way. The only instructions that they really give you that are different, you know, when you're actually out on the horse, is horses will want to do two things. One, try and eat anything that looks tasty, which is pretty much any green plant that you come along. So if the horse deviates from the trail, it's supposed to bring it back on. And then also horses want to investigate deer when they see them in the woods. So try and keep them on the path. Also, they said they don't know what bobcats are, even though they see them. So they but the thing that they're afraid of is turkeys.
Turkeys, really?
Turkeys will sit in the middle of the trail sunning themselves and apparently like puff up really big when they see the horses coming, and the horses freak out. And I'm like, the horse weighs 1,000 pounds. That turkey could be dinner. Like, what? Why is the horse concerned about the turkey? And it's like, horses don't know. So.
Okay. Wow.
Super fun. Lasted about half an hour. The other thing that I didn't realize in riding a horse is how much of a leg workout it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're basically like pushing down on the stirrups a little bit all the time. And then at the end of it, like you've basically been doing like semi-squats for 30 minutes. Yeah, it was, my legs were wobbly, not going to lie. Yeah,
okay. Did you get back to Circle D at all? No.
We there's too much construction going on to go all the way back there. So we went, you know, the area right behind that first loop of cabins, the easternmost set of cabins. We started there and then sort of went north and east and then looped back to go south and west. But it was a half an hour. And I would say half an hour is about the amount of time that I wanted that experience to be. I could have done an hour, but I wouldn't have wanted to do more than that. But it was super fun.
Conversely, I want to say a year or so ago, Nancy and I wanted to do the classic New England thing, the horse-drawn sleigh, same thing. It was a half hour long, and I won't lie, Len, just that I'm not sure what the horse had eaten prior to our sleigh ride, but they were a little gassy, so after a half hour...
It was memorable. Yeah.
It was memorable, yes. So it was like, yeah, we're done. That's good. This is lovely, and we are outdoors, so it was well ventilated, but yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of that too. I mean, there's a lot of horse poop around. But
there we go.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I did. Chrissy's particularly queasy about stuff like that, but she's absolutely fine. So cool. It was a lot of fun. I would totally do it again. And the morning weather is best. So it was about
definitely
but before about the 60 Florida when heat. I went.
There we go.
It was great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Jim. On to surveys. So several listeners, including our friends Jared, Kelly, and Brian, got a survey from Universal Parks and Resorts asking about kids in theme parks. And the survey did not initially identify itself as from Universal, but if you answered correctly a few questions, you got the survey. So the questions were, like the screening questions, were how many kids that are 18 do you have in the house? What are your typical weekend activities? What places do you like to take your kids to? What cities could you see taking your kids to in the next 3 years? And Dallas was one of them. Here's three interesting questions. What's a drive in minutes you wouldn't have a second thought about doing for a trip? And then what's a drive that you would sort of have to plan out, but you'd be able to do? And then what's a drive you would refuse to do at all in a car? So that's really interesting. So that's basically they're trying to figure out what the drivable market is.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Yeah, for that.
Okay.
So if you answer those questions correctly, the survey revealed itself as a Universal Kids survey. And here are some of the other questions. And this is the first one I've ever seen with a specific price point. So they describe what's going to be at Universal Kids. And they said, given that description, how likely would you be to visit Universal Kids Resort if an admission ticket cost $55 per person? And the range from definitely would visit to definitely not visit, five answers. And then they asked the same question at $45 and $65. And so my question there is, when anytime it comes to survey design and you mention a number, it feels like that first number is there as an anchoring effect. Like all the other numbers after that are positioned relative to that first number, not in its absolute value. So I'm not sure how that's going. Then the next question was, how many times per year would you visit at that price? And then how likely would you be to purchase an annual pass if the annual pass was $119 to $299? How likely would you be to stay at a hotel if it was $300 a night on site? And then last question, how does visiting Universal Kids Resort impact your interest in visiting Universal Studios? Ah, there you go. Good survey.
It's a good survey, and that tells you where they pull their potential audience for the Hollywood attraction from. So,
good survey. It'll be interesting to see what the results are like. Also, if they do a second round of this where they start to hone in on pricing or more details, please, folks, send those in. Because this is really informative as to what they're thinking. All right, on to listener emails. From an anonymous source related to our DAZ coverage last week, I am reminded Disney is partnering with a third-party medical group and not completely outsourcing the accessibility department. This partnership will support the accessibility team from a guidance perspective. There are tons of guest relations cast members and managers who are excited to begin their new role in accessibility services. So guests can be assured that they will continue to have individualized conversation with cast members who will guide them to the appropriate services and accommodations. Awesome.
True, you know, but at the same time, they will also have a brand new cricket bat to wield, you know, in certain situations, you know?
Yeah, I'm still fairly confident. I mean, I'm still really confident that this is going to work out well.
I don't know, same thing. It's just, but at the same time, you know, it's meant to help the people who actually need to use the service.
Also, on last week's show, I asked you, Jim, whether Prince Ali, the new Aladdin character at 1900 Park Fair at the Grand Floridian, is the first prince at a character meal since Prince Charming in 2009, and lots of people wrote in to say that Prince Eric and Prince Charming were both at the Trattoria Al Forno character breakfast before the pandemic, so thank you guys for that. Also, y'all have the cutest family photos from that place. I'm kind of surprised it hasn't come back in that form. Like, the photos are really good.
Mm-hmm. You know, and to explain, of course, you know, I mean, that restaurant is at the very top of the Riviera, right? You know, of course.
This is a Trattoria Al Forno at Epcot. Boardwalk.
I thought we were talking about the artist at the Riviera. My mistake.
All right. Also, Stephanie wrote in about Halloween Horror Nights. She says, my husband and I have been attending HHN for the past 5 years and agree that it's an awesome Halloween event. Last year, we decided to do the RIP tour. In full transparency, this tour is expensive, but it is so worth the money. In all our years of going, we've only made it through five or six houses per event. We're also exhausted from all of the walking and waiting in lines. But on the RIP tour, we got through all 10 houses in 4 hours. And in those 4 hours, we also experienced all of the scare zones. We had private areas to take breaks, to eat and to hydrate. Food and non-alcoholic drinks were complimentary and had reserved seating at the main show. So, yeah, there we go. Also, Stephanie mentions that after the tour, you're free to ride attractions via the express lane, and they'll be doing it again this year. Yeah, so I totally recommend this as well. Good story. All right, from Brock B., how does Disney feel about the YouTuber TikTok subgenre of vloggers that have popped up around their Disney parks? Yeah, interesting question. All right, man. So I think for every business, they're trying to be as accommodating as possible in the hopes of getting positive coverage. I think they've got fairly sophisticated metrics to track who they work with and for which events. And they have specific rules about what all of your posts, not just the Disney ones, should look like. So no profanity, no discussion of controversial issues, nothing like that. And obviously you have to say nice things about them, otherwise you don't qualify. I think Disney doesn't like the things that none of us like. So doing unsafe things like jumping into World Showcase Lagoon for clicks or trying to take handheld video on Tron despite the warnings, like don't do stuff like that. That's just dumb. And, you know, I think that's it. Yeah, it's basically they're looking at it like everyone else does. All right, last question from John B., he says, I was wondering if you know why Disneyland specifically, but also the other Disney parks, get better specialty popcorn buckets than Walt Disney World and more frequently. And Jim, you know, my first response here was be fair to Florida and I was going to be done with it. But then Tokyo Disney, Jim, just released their new Peter Pan popcorn bucket image. And I put the image in the show notes. It's a small model of Big Ben where the roof comes off for popcorn and the clock dial glows at night. Come on, John has a point here.
Oh no, but absolutely, but I will tell you from my interactions with folks on the consumer products ends of things, the hard reality is Walt Disney World typical get, what is it, every 3.5 years, that's the target. Whereas Walt Disney World, Disneyland, they shoot to have locals come at least twice a year. Whereas Tokyo, I mean, they have people coming to the park, you know, monthly, straight out of the city, the younger office girls who work at home and have disposable income. So they're the ones buying the new Duffy dolls, and they're certainly the ones buying these amazingly elaborate popcorn buckets. So it's more about servicing the specific audience that comes to that park. And so that's why you get these crazy, detailed, amazing popcorn buckets, both in Tokyo and Anaheim.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, and Florida has its own...
Locals
market, but it's not as big. Like I've told Laurel, like if it was easier to park and actually get into the parks, I would eat dinner there probably every night. Like why not? It's fun.
And not to belabor the obvious, but for specific events, like what is it, the artist festival, you know, at Epcot every year. Lately, we've seen what we saw first, the Figment popcorn bucket, then we saw the Imagination Pavilion popcorn bucket. Again, they will do one nice one a year.
Yeah.
So clear space for the 2025 one, folks. It's coming.
We're months away, John, from Walt Disney World having its next popcorn.
There we go.
Bucket.
There
Fantastic.
We go.
All right. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, Jim finishes the story of how Walt Disney World's Tomorrowland came to be. We'll be right back.
Just a reminder, folks, Mother's Day is coming up fast. It's May 12th this year, which is a whole lot closer than you might think. So, how are you going to celebrate your mom this year? Because, let's be honest here, she really doesn't need another knickknack. I mean, that's just one more thing for her to dust. And yes, sure, you could take your mother out to dinner or Sunday brunch. But then again, in the big scheme of things, a meal, while it may be filling, isn't exactly the sort of gift that lasts. So if you're looking to give mom something significant this year, a gift that she'll genuinely treasure for years yet to come, well, have you considered Storyworth? Storyworth, for those of you who don't already know, is this terrific online service that makes it easy for a loved one to record their life story so that all those precious memories can then be preserved in a beautifully designed book. Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. Oh, we're talking questions like, were you more like your mother or your father? And in what ways? Or, who were the best cooks in your family? Storyworth makes the writing process a breeze. All your loved one needs to do is then respond to that email with a story, long or short, doesn't matter. After a year, Storyworth then compiles these stories and whatever photos your loved one has shared into a handsome hardcover keepsake book, which you'll then be able to share and revisit for generations yet to come. And for me, what I truly love about Storyworth is it's pulled some stories out of my 92-year-old mom that I have never, ever heard before. Like how my mother was so reluctant to go visit her sister Lorna in the hospital when she was getting ready to have my cousin Bonnie. I mean, movies and TV shows had told my mom that women who are going through labor, well, they're in a lot of pain and they scream and they cry. So imagine my mom's surprise when she arrives at the hospital and then finds Lorna in bed in labor. Only the way my aunt is distracting herself from the pain of childbirth is by reading through a pile of comic books. It's those sorts of sweet, if a trifle weird, stories that you'll be able to unearth from your family history thanks to Storyworth. And speaking of families, families love Storyworth. That's why it has more than 25,000 five-star reviews over on Trustpilot, with millions of stories being preserved since Storyworth was first founded over 10 years ago. So give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/DizzyDish. That's storyworth.com/DizzyDish to save $10 on your first purchase. We thank them for sponsoring today's show. Okay, let's be honest here. You're going through a lot right now, right? And while you want to make eating healthier a priority, shopping for fresh ingredients, not to mention all the prep prior to cooking, makes doing drive-through seem like the more convenient choice. Well, Green Chef makes mealtime quick and simple. Their meals are shipped directly to you with their premium ingredients all pre-measured. All you have to do is follow Green Chef's easy step-by-step instruction, which come on these cards with photos, and you can whip up one of their dinners in 30 minutes and one of their lunches in 10. Nance and I tried one of Green Chef's pre-measured and prep meals earlier this week. We made their Italian herb barramundi with toasted pearl couscous. Nancy chopped up the summer squash while I grilled the fillets, and Green Chef wasn't wrong. 30 minutes later, we were sitting down to have a healthy, tasty meal. And the beauty part is, if you sign up for Green Chef, every week you get to choose from over 80 meal options that are then tailored to suit lifestyle preferences like keto, calorie smart, plant-based, and gluten-free. Which means that, well, you get the chance to try some new flavors while still keeping up with your lifestyle goals, thanks to Green Chef's chef-curated recipes. Which again, gets sent to you with exactly what you need for each meal with an easy-to-follow recipe, which makes mealtime a breeze. So if this sounds like something you'd like to try, go to greenchef.com/DisneyDish50 and use code DisneyDish50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. Again, that's greenchef.com/DisneyDish50 and use code DisneyDish50 for 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. We thank them for sponsoring today's show. Walt Disney once said that for every laugh, there should be a tear, which is why I think, anyway, he would have loved Drawn to Life, that hugely entertaining, surprising, and emotional spectacle that's now being presented live on stage at Disney Springs in Lake Buena Vista, Florida. Presented by Cirque du Soleil and Disney, this is a show that I can guarantee you will captivate audiences of all ages. I saw this show during a recent trip to Walt Disney World, and let me tell you, I'm ready to go see it again right now. Drawn to Life is filled with breathtaking acrobatics, stunning visuals, and heartwarming storytelling. The creative geniuses behind Cirque du Soleil and Walt Disney Animation Studios have come together to create this show where imagination literally knows no bounds. Filled with dazzling performances, not to mention beloved Disney characters coming to life in ways you've only just dreamed about, Drawn to Life is a must-see, family-friendly spectacle that will leave you, well, in awe. So don't miss out on your chance to be part of the magic. Plan your visit to Disney Springs today and reserve your seats for Drawn to Life by Cirque du Soleil and Disney, live on stage. Set your imagination in motion.
All right, Jim, when we left off last time, it was part two. It was the late summer or fall of 72?
Yep. And again, obviously, situation. Magic Kingdom still needs additional capacity, so they were looking at expanding Tomorrowland on that side of the park. Same time, there are discussions about putting the Walt Disney World Showcase at the edge of the Magic Kingdom parking lot, right next to the monorail station, TTC, and then there was Epcot the City. As we went into at length on the last show, Project Florida had a future problem. You know, they had these three aspects of their destination resort: Tomorrowland, the Walt Disney World Showcase, and Epcot the City. They were all futuristic in their overall outlook and design. But for them to succeed, these three very different things were going to need distinctly different identities and different versions of the future. And just a quick side note here. We did see Disney exploring, you know, how to do this. I mean, you remember, you know, in the mid-90s where we got the new Tomorrowland at the Magic Kingdom, the one that was sci-fi of the 30s, that sort of thing, Buck Rogers.
Blue. Yeah, it was like a steampunk sort of tribute.
Yeah, that's it exactly. And what's interesting, Len, is I had folks in Disney management explain that the reason they did this is that there were people who went to the resort in Florida who were confused by the fact that the Magic Kingdom had a Tomorrowland and Epcot had a Future World. And what's interesting is 30 years later, they were still dealing with the same issue. I mean, think about the rebranding of Future World at Epcot just over the past 5 years. We now have what? World Discovery, World Nature, World Celebration. And what's funny is this isn't exclusively a Disney or a Universal problem. I can't tell you the cast members I've talked with, who they're working on the Main Street and have people walk up to them. It's like, where's the Harry Potter land?
You joke. It happens often enough.
Oh, yeah.
That we actually had to put clarification in the unofficial guide to Walt Disney World that the Harry Potter stuff is not at Disney. Honest to God.
Well, at flip side, though, just recently, Universal at Islands Adventure has had to deal with people who march into Marvel Superhero Island and go, okay, I'm here for Guardians. Where is it? You know, that Cosmic Rewind thing. And it's like, oh, well, you get on the four.
Is this Avengers Campus?
There we go. There we go.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, back to late summer, early fall of 1972. And again, other thing that's important to remember here is this is, parks only been open for a year at this point. And remember, that when they budgeted Disney World back in the mid-60s, it was supposed to cost $100 million to make. And by the time, It actually opened in the fall of 71. You know, construction costs had skyrocketed to $400 million, and again, not unexpected. You know, because I can remember Disneyland when it was being built in 54. You know, it was supposed to cost $5 million. It eventually cost 17. So
yeah, just multiply that initial estimate by four. You're fine.
Yeah, that's it exactly. But at the same time, you know, the folks at Disney are like, all right, we have to be responsible. We have to expand the resort, but at the same time, we went so over budget on this thing, and we have to pay down that debt, and you know, so they were trying to be disciplined. But then in September of 1972, the Mattel Corporation announces that they are building Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus World right down the road from the Magic Kingdom, 10 miles away in Haines City. And when Disney executives learn details of this $60 million project, they freak. First of all, what terrifies them is, you know, who helped design the place? Rolly Crump, one of Walt's favorite Imagineers.
He was no longer working for Disney at the time?
Well, Rolly, I mean, you know, that was the interesting thing. You know, Rolly had stepped away from the company. He was one of these, you know, there were a number of folks who, after Walt died in December of 1966, for lack of a better term, some of Walt's favorites got punished because they had been Walt's favorites. I mean, for example, Wally Bogue, who, you know, Walt loved. And, you know, Walt brought him in, you know, for example, to help write the Enchanted Tiki Room. And he voiced characters in the Enchanted Tiki Room. And Walt had started him working over at the studio. In fact, Wally was the original voice of Tigger for the Winnie the Pooh shorts. And when Walt died, you know, suddenly, you know, a lot of people who, let's be honest, they were kind of jealous of the attention that had been paid to Wally and by extension, Rolly. The plum assignments stopped going their way. And so, you know, in Rolly's case, he decided to take off for greener pastures. And greener pastures were Circus World, which, by the way, Len, you know, again, so much of the classic Disney playbook was in the DNA for Circus World. I mean, take, for example, when you enter the park, it's a small town, small American town, turn of the century, the day the circus has come to town.
Okay. So every day is the day the circus comes to town?
Every day. Okay.
Wow, that's not a bad premise.
Okay. Yeah, and what's cool is as you arrive at the park, you're actually encouraged to go to the very back of the park because they have the line, the circus train lined up, and you get to watch as the elephants and the lions and all of the animals you'll see that night in the performance are offloaded. And then, you know, they're literally setting up or pretending to set up the Big Top as you're there. And, you know, and you can tour Clown Alley and get made up by a clown, or you can visit.
How is this podcast not named Clown Alley, Jim?
There we go. There we go.
I just need to stop here for a second.
You know,
like, okay.
But you could also tour, you know, for example, the farrier, you know, the folks who build the harnesses the horses, or the people who do the costumes. Now, here's the other thing, though, Len, that's the insidious hidden agenda of Circus World. The Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus had for decades wintered in Florida. In fact, Sarasota, Florida. In fact, you know, I'm sure at some point you and Laurel have been over to the Ringling Mansion, the Italian Palazzo right there in the Gulf. And yeah, the circus would winter in Sarasota, but it was where it wintered in Sarasota. That was for the version of the circus that used to have canvas tents. And starting in the mid-60s, when Irvin Feld bought the circus, he changed it into one that went into arenas, you know, the Boston Garden, you know, that sort of thing. And so Irvin, you know, it's like, look, I run a modern circus. I need a modern headquarters. And so when Mattel buys the circus in late 60s, early 70s, Irvin sells them on the idea of, look, I need, you know, a modern corporate headquarters and a modern wintering facility for the circus. But what if we build a theme park on the front half of that And the notion is that people pay to come see where we winter, where we do our costume. Oh, yeah. And so this is Disney now looking over the fence at what is going to be built down the road. And it's like, oh, my God, look at their financial model. You know, they don't, you know, it's not a question. Well, first of all, they're piggybacking on us. We've established a destination resort in Orlando. So people would fly into town, do Disney, and then go up the road to Circus World. But at the same time, it's like, it's their corporate headquarters. People are touring to visit their corporate headquarters. Oh. And it's like, you know, they don't even need the money we need to be successful.
Yeah, they're doing it on like a fraction of the budget. Oh my God, that's amazing.
No, and this is the other thing. And this is a Disney staring down the barrel of this. And with their carefully crafted Phase 1 program, which ends the summer of 76 after the American Bicentennial, and then they pivot out of that into Phase 2, and they construct Epcot. And here's the Circus World plan, where it's totally what Disney did. I mean, for example, Len, they were going to open, instead of the Walt Disney World Preview Center and Hotel Plaza, they were going to open the Circus Showcase. And, you know, same thing. You could go to the site and look at the models and the concept art, but the, you know, and again, Feld is a showman, so it's like, yeah. Oh, well, you want to see a movie? I mean, Disney showed you a movie of what they were going to do. We're going to do a movie too. Only ours is going to be the first time IMAX is used east of the Mississippi.
Oh, IMAX dates back that far. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was the thing. So Disney, you know, there are Disney executives clutching their chest over this, and it's like, oh, God. And remember, they announced this September of 72. 1 month later, Walt Disney World celebrates its first anniversary and holds what to this day is called the Shock and Awe press conference. You know?
Really?
Yeah. And it's just sort of like, yeah, what are we going to do? Oh, well, we're bringing Pirates of the Caribbean to Florida. And hey, Space Mountain, that thing we're going to build at Disneyland, that's coming to Florida. And we're going to double the size of the campground at Fort Wilderness. We're going to do a shopping village right there at Lakewood.
Some guy that was parking my car said Donald Duck. We're doing that too.
And just totally by coincidence, absolutely no connection between the two projects. Disney, for all four of these things, is going to be spending $60 million. You know, it's just sort of like, wow, you guys just pulled that number out of the air somewhere. Now, lots of people are obviously shocked by this announcement. Mark Davis, who had spent 5 years working on Western River, goes into work at Imagineering one day, and it's like, Mark, stop with the Cowboys and Indians. We need you to do a Pirates for Florida stat. Likewise, the folks at Disneyland, who had been told as far back as 1965 they were getting Space Mountain, which is why, starting in 1966, they began prominently featuring Space Mountain on their souvenir maps at the park.
Wow, that early.
That early. I mean, and literally, you know, right on it said future attraction. So they got that ripped away from them, and it opened first in Florida. And kind of a weird bend on this story. For a time, Mark goes to Disneyland and says, well, you lost Space Mountain. You want Western River? And they began to look for places to put it in the park in Anaheim. And kind of the really cruel irony here is the place that would have been perfect for it, where Disneyland's original Indian Village was located, that spot was no longer available because another thing that Mark Davis had designed for Florida, Country Bear, was going to be built back there. So Disney, because they're panicked, because there's a well-funded project with Mattel's might and money behind it, going to be built down the road from Walt Disney World, panics, spends this money that they really don't have, Len. Remember, they were supposed to be paying down that $400 million. And let's also remember that they announced this in October of 72. The very next year is the Arab oil embargo, and suddenly the resort is dealing with this period where people can't even find gas to get down to Florida.
Right. Yes, even if they could, they can't, right?
No.
Even if they wanted to, they couldn't.
So, crazy, scary time at Disney. Years worth of planning that had carefully been put together for Phase 1 and Phase 2 of the project thrown out the window. And here's the cruelest irony of all, Len. They didn't have to do it.
I was going to ask you this because, like, when Disney committed to it, did they They must have started spending that money immediately.
Oh, no, totally. The fire hose got turned on, especially for Pirates of the Caribbean. But here's the cruel irony. 1971, 1972, the Mattel Corporation experiences two truly terrible Christmases back-to-back. First Christmas, there's a dock worker strike out in Long Beach. And this is the main port in the U.S. where Mattel's product, coming over from factories in Asia, would have to be offloaded. And the strike lasts into the fall of that year, which means that Mattel's toys can't make it to store shelves in time for Christmas. And so company's stuck with all of this inventory come January, has to write it off. They lose a bundle. Ugh. Okay, 1972, Mattel management decides we're not going to let that happen again. We're not going to be tripped up by the dock workers. Let's shift most of our toy production from Asia to Mexico.
Where you can truck it in if you needed to.
Well, yeah.
What could go wrong, Jim?
What could go wrong? Okay, late summer of 1972, there is a massive fire at Mattel's main factory in Mexico. 75% of their inventory goes up in flames. Two miserable Christmases back-to-back puts Mattel in an awful financial hole. And at that point, tough decisions have to be made. So, all right, picture this, Lynn. It's April 26, 1973. It's roughly 6 months after Mattel has announced they're going to build Circus World in Haines City. Irvin Feld, the then president of Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey, is in his hotel room getting dressed. That morning, he's supposed to preside over the groundbreaking for the Circus World Showcase. Again, this project equivalent of the Disney World Preview Center. And, you know, Irvin, as you'd expect from a guy who runs a circus, is a real showman. He's arranged for 12 of the circus's elephants to be there at the groundbreaking. He's had the costume department make big yellow construction hats and oversized shovels, all right? And they have been training the elephants for weeks to wield these shovels with their trunks at the groundbreaking ceremony. It's going to be a hell of a photo op.
That's beautiful.
So the phone rings in Irvin's room. He picks up the receiver. It's Ruth Handler, the founder of Mattel. She and her husband, Elliot, started the company back in 45. And Ruth gets right to the point. It's like, Irv, we're selling the circus to Venture Out. They're the recreation arm, a part of Gulf Oil. And to be honest, I don't know if Gulf Oil is going to go forward with the construction of Circus World. I'm so sorry to do this to you, but we had to sell. We're out of money. Good luck to you.
But by the way, where are the elephants? Click. Yeah.
Okay. And so, wow. And he has to walk out the door and go preside over the groundbreaking ceremony. Len, this is such an amazing story, the twisty-turny tale of Circus World in Florida. I've been researching this story, the history of this park, and how it was intertwined with Disney in the 70s for almost 50 years at this point. At some point, we have to do something of size about this. But long story short, this is how we wound up with the Tomorrowland we have today, with a Space Mountain that arrived in Florida years ahead of when it was supposed to, all because Circus World, which, again, one time had the might of Mattel behind it, panicked Disney management. And again, what I love about this story is we know from Dumbo, you know, that elephants are supposed to be frightened of mice. And this time around, it was a mouse that was frightened by an elephant. So
I don't know if you've ever come up with a better closing than that, Jim. That was kind of great.
Okay. Well, we try. We try.
So did they eventually build Circus World if they went in with the groundbreaking?
They did. But
did it eventually open?
It did open, but it was a shadow of what it was supposed to be. So many of the Crump developed ideas fell off the table. It was a heartbreaker from the get-go. And it changed owners numerous times. You may recall driving by there when it was renamed Boardwalk and Baseball for a brief time.
That was that, like the 90s?
Yeah. 2000? Yeah. And now, you know, in fact, most recently, remember when we were doing our event on the Disney Cruise Line and at breakfast, you and Chrissy said, oh, by the way, there's a hurricane. We're leaving now. You know, okay. That day, Nancy and I made the call, you know, after we got off the boat and realized we couldn't get a flight home. We were going to drive home back up to New Hampshire with our rental car. We actually ended up at the shopping center that was built on top of Circus World. In fact, given the way Target smelled that day, I think they built it on top of the elephant, you know, enclosure. It's a fascinating story. We have to do something with it.
Oh, that is amazing. All right. Well, we'll look at it. All right, folks, that's going to do it for the show today. You can help support our show by subscribing over at patreon.com/JimHaleMedia, where we're posting exclusive shows every week. Our most recent show came out last week and is answers to your listener questions. Check it out at patreon.com/JimHaleMedia. On next week's show, we have our friend Jim Shull on to talk about all things park-related. You can find more of Jim at JimHaleMedia.com and more of me, Len, at TouringPlans.com. We're produced spectacularly by Eric Hersey. He'll be defending the undisputed Circus Voltaire World Title Belt at the Delaware Pinball Collective 2024 Tour Open Championship on Saturday, May 18th, 2024, from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. at the Delaware Pinball Collective on First State Boulevard in beautiful downtown Wilmington, Delaware. While Eric's doing that, please go onto iTunes and rate our show and tell us what you'd like to hear next. We're dedicating this show to Melissa Krim and the family of our friend Andy Krim, who passed away last week. Andy was a great guy, a huge theme park fan, and for some reason, known only to Andy and God, a fan of the show. Many of you all met Andy at our events, including the Star Cruiser meet and our Disney Dish Cruise and others. He was always in a good mood and always up for doing something in the parks, and Andy will be missed. For Jim, this is Len. We will see you on the next show.